Good afternoon, everyone. This is Michael Vandervoort, and it's May 22nd, and we are recording an audio-only version of the Left to Boom show. I have a couple of my colleagues at LRI here with me today. I'd like to welcome Deneen Clay and Amber Glessner. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well, Michael. How about yourself?
I, as you know, had that little bit of work done on my hand yesterday, and it's still tender, but I'm fine. I'm able to run a mouse at least for a few hours, so can keep working. I'm doing well. For those folks that are listening, why don't we start with you, Deneen, and just real quickly kind of tell folks who you are and what you do.
Sure. So my name is Deneen Clay, and I am the relatively still new chief of staff here at LRI. I joined LRI at their home base at the end of September. Prior to that, I did some consulting work as one of their persuader consultants, educators. And so I've known LRI for years, but just came to work with them full-time relatively recently. I basically do anything and everything to free up some of Phil's life so that he can focus on getting out, doing more podcasts, doing more marketing, meeting more clients. So I am technically his right hand. Yep. Although there are many of us that hold his other hands as well. And so my job is just to make everyone's life a little bit easier.
Awesome. And Amber?
Hi, I'm Amber Glessner. I'm one of the labor relations consultants, educators, however you want to describe it. I've been with LRI for about a year and a half now. My background is different from a lot of other people who get the opportunity to consult for LRI. My background's actually in the military, and I'll talk about that a little bit, I think, today and how that's been transferable. But I'm actually in Oklahoma right now, so it's great to be here. Great to see you guys in real time. I'm excited to get going.
Awesome. Yeah, so we're going to talk about something that's a little different. We have been doing a lot of work with what we do at LRI, reporting on industry trends and a lot of that kind of stuff, and we've been trying to ramp up sort of the content that we bring to folks around what are hot topics in labor relations. And one of those that's been developing for a while and has really been hot that we thought we wanted to touch on today was a little bit around the growing labor relations trends in the cannabis industry. So and so Deneen and Amber had done some work at different times in the past in that area. They are not industry experts by any means, but they have had their hands in kind of dealing with folks in that area. And so I thought we'd run through a series of questions. And just feel free to make this conversational, right? We'll talk around. But the first question, I guess, or to get us started, is let's talk about maybe, because we have a looming declassification or a change of status with the marijuana is like a Schedule One drug, I believe, and they're talking about dropping it down. And because it's a Schedule One drug, it's legal in states, but it's still technically illegal under the federal government laws. And none of this is super directly relevant to what we want to talk about, but it sets the stage. There's a lot of complexity to being in this business, and there's a lot of different government regulations at the state, local, federal layer, and they can't accept cash, and so there's like a lot of weird things, right? Mm-hmm. That the businesses have to contend with, and by extension that means that the employees have to contend with and the people who work in the industry, and so it creates some really I think some unique challenges. So why don't we start there, and why don't you, and I'll go to you first, Amber. What unique challenges have you encountered while working in the cannabis industry as compared to some of the others that you've touched in your time?
Yeah, so I think you teed it up really well in that it's so new and ever-changing that every issue that is brought is new, and there's no guideline on where they're going or how they're going to get to where they want to be. Something that I think is a unique challenge, but also an asset to the industry, is how culturally diverse they are. Not just with age, race, gender, you know, sexuality, gender identity, you name it. But it presents a different leveled issue in terms of the relations piece, because it's so diverse when we come into those environments. A lot of times the issues are hard to pinpoint because they're so varied amongst the group of employees that work there. You know, an 18-year-old fresh out of high school who just loves the idea of weed is a very different employee than someone who might have been cultivating in their home the past 30 years, and they've joined this industry because they have a true passion for the medicinal aspect of it, which is another layered, unique trend within cannabis. You know, a lot of them believe that because it is medicinal, they should be paid accordingly as comparable to maybe someone who works in medicine. And that was a challenge that I didn't expect, because that's a great argument. You know, if they work on the medical side of the company or whatever, should they be offered separate amenities because of that? Should they have a difference in pay? And that was a challenge that was something that I didn't expect to see until we were in it. That's probably the biggest one that I would say.
Interesting. Deneen, from a client perspective, like what kind of challenges do you hear about, or what if has come to your attention? Leadership issues, others?
I would say one of the biggest challenges is actually the misconception about the industry that it's such a big moneymaker. I think things will be changing with the new regulations that are coming forward. But right now, because of the regulations, there's a lot of financial constraints on the industry. And so many of the individuals who are trying to become employees within the cannabis industry expect to be getting paid, you know, very high wages, when honestly, the company can't afford that. And it's very hard to overcome the misconception that it is big money. And I think that is a challenge that every cannabis client that I've encountered has come up against.
I think if I could add to that really quickly, Deneen, that to me ties into that cultural aspect. They have a dichotomy almost of, you know, cannabis in itself, again, medicinal, healing, it invites a certain type of person into that environment. And on the second hand, it is a money generating machine. And a lot of times employees have a hard time understanding or separating that, just because, you know, the practice itself is healing and it invites a certain type of person, we still are a business that need to make money. Mm-hmm. So you need to perform to help us get there. And that was, again, that cultural aspect that was really hard to navigate in the actual workplace from a consultant standpoint.
So as you and, you know, Deneen, you've been doing some of this work for a while, mm-hmm. longer than Amber, but just experientially, having dealt with other clients in other industries, what was useful coming into the cannabis industry? And like, was there anything new that you had to like anything you had to learn that you never expected to deal with or whatever?
Yes, the whole industry was new. I mean, you had to learn the retail side versus the cultivation side, and it's a brand new world. I mean, for example, I didn't recognize how much science is behind the actual cultivation end of things. And it's absolutely fascinating when you have the opportunity to tour and be engaged with the individuals that are actually growing this, and the different smells, the different types, the different, all of it. So that is very, very different, and there's nothing comparable. But one of the things I think that was helpful to bring to the cannabis industry is many individuals see cannabis more as a retail type of industry. And so there aren't necessarily job progression steps in place to address the needs of the employees. And so one of the things that I think both Amber and I have focus a great deal on is introducing that to the industry, that you need to look at where are they going to go from the moment they come in, say, as a retail worker, how can they progress within the company, and what is your track for that? How are you going to provide that professional development that your employees need? Mm-hmm. And I think that's another key piece that you can bring from other industries into cannabis that currently, you know, initially wasn't there.
You know, it's really interesting too, because like in big formal retail, you know, whether you're talking a, you know, like a retail store that sells clothes and hardware, or you're talking a retail store that sells groceries, there's a very defined, to your point, there's very defined career paths. There's very defined career ladders. There's often the ability to move over into other parts of the industry. Like you can go from a grocery store clerk job into a corporate job or that kind of stuff. The with the cannabis industry, it's almost like it's two distinct worlds is what I've not worked in it, but just, you know, just observing it, there's, to your point, Deneen, the retail side. And then there's this whole other technical aspect of like, I don't know, what do they call it? Cultivating, I guess, cultivating the plants. Cultivation. And then there's also like some traditional, and I don't know exactly how these folks interface with the companies, but like somebody's got to like, there's like farm worker type people that actually pick and do work on the plants, right? Beyond, not the cultivators, not the people who are doing like the breeding of the plants, but they're actually prepping and collecting the product and getting it ready. And that's a lot of different varieties of employees to deal with in your ecosystem. So where does that cause stress and that sort of thing?
Amber, you want to take that one?
Sure. I think even it's one thing that was interesting for Deneen and I think initially, once we started learning the lay of the difference between retail and cultivation, within cultivation, there's an ag piece, an agriculture piece, as well as a production piece. And a lot of times those two teams don't need to talk. They're two completely different workplaces. And they like it that way. They like that they're set in their routine and, you know, their specialty. Whereas on retail, we've found that they crave more of a whole experience. So the complaints or the issues that come up are completely different on either side between retail and cultivation, just given the dynamics of how that facility needs to run. And even so, with that, the qualification level on cultivation is completely different leadership wise than qualification on retail. Because retail grew so rapidly there, you know, with that comes understaffing and people get thrown into leadership positions. And as a company grows, they don't have plans in place on how to train these leaders. There's not time, right? We're playing catch up most of the time. Whereas on cultivation, there's so much red tape, the place won't open until those lines are drawn and the system's ready to run. So that's another really interesting part of the two worlds, is that they're so very different.
Yeah. And I guess also to your point, Amber, you have like the retail dispensaries, the retail stores, dispensaries or stores, depending on which jurisdiction and whether it's medicinal or completely legal, like it isn't, you know, it varies all over. And then you have like the grow facilities, right? And then I don't know if they do all that cultivation work there in the grow facilities, or do they have other kinds of, like, do they have like a research lab somewhere or something, or is that not anything you've seen?
It depends, honestly. It varies from state to state.
Okay.
Because different states have different regulations. Some have specific parameters as far as how far or geographically a grow facility can be from a retail facility. Other states do not. And then, so it just depends. But even if they're located physically in the same location, the culture, as Amber was mentioning, it's very different between those considered more in the agricultural type of role and those in the production role.
Interesting. So as it comes to, I guess, you know, consulting with these companies, like you said, you introduced some new ideas, and we saw someone speak from the industry at a conference that we were at recently. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so it's kind of like one of the things is, almost everything is new and a lot of it is unwritten. Mm-hmm. And these are not like Fortune 50 companies or Fortune 100 companies, but these are not small enterprises either, right? I mean, it's rather complex and So how are they kind of growing themselves out of it? Like it sounds like they're building the plane while they're trying to catch the flight.
They are.
That's spot on.
Yeah.
I think for Deneen and I, and you know, she can probably elaborate on this more from the position she's in, but we have tried to shift where we can be helpful into that operational piece, because at the end of the day, we can go to a million sites and tell you all the issues that you have, but until you have the resource and time to implement what we're telling you, you're just going to keep hearing the same thing over and over. So trying to go back to the drawing board and let them know, this is what we're seeing, but now let's move towards solution, as opposed to just again, keeping like beating a dead horse about all the operational issues that they already know. So helping at maybe a higher level.
And another important piece is communication, because yes. of the diversity that exists from state to state, from, you know, whether it's legal or not legal, or from, if you're looking at the actual employees, the diversity that exists there, communication usually is the key, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it's usually honestly not sufficient. And that is the foundation of many of their problems.
I don't like in the beginning of some of these things, it felt like maybe like smaller people, you know, like it was individuals trying to start a weed shop, if you will, maybe, or grow their own and, you know, expand so they could sell it in it. And I don't know if that ever was really a thing, or if it was just sort of the, you know, one of the quirky startup stories as this industry started to grow a few years ago. Now it seems to me that the companies that are in it are a lot bigger, right? They're operating across multiple states and that kind of thing. So they're really a pretty, I mean, these aren't people that are working out of their garage or their backyard. They have corporate offices and money behind them and all that kind of stuff. So, but they still have to build the plane before it can take off, right? So where are their challenges? I may be asking the same question over again, I don't know. Where are their challenges as they try to kind of bring all these complicated pieces together? And like for example, here's an external problem. Like in some states, there have been requirements where sort of like a neutrality agreement, like in certain jurisdictions, they've said, you know, you can get a store, or you can, you know, you can open your business, but if any union comes along and, you know, your employees want to work with the union, you have to maintain a neutrality stance. Mm-hmm. Or in some other jurisdictions, similar but a little bit different spin, almost like project labor agreements, right? In the construction industry, where mm-hmm. if you open this store, you have to agree to recognize a union almost simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of like labor relations, very specific organizing issues that can affect employers, but they don't deal with that in every state. They, you know, so if they run in Massachusetts and California and Michigan and Oklahoma, they're dealing with all these regulations differently in each state, right?
Correct. Yeah. They're called labor peace agreements.
Labor peace agreements. Yeah.
Yeah. And even out of what, like the 25 states where it's legal recreationally, only 6 or 8 require labor peace agreements. And that doesn't include the states that incentivize them. Illinois is an example. They incentivize having a labor peace agreement. It's not a mandate, but what they say is, you know, if you implement it, you know, we'll expedite your licensing process, for example, is some type of incentive. When we've dealt with that in some capacity, but again, it just creates this added red tape of how do you get around that? How do you, right, Deneen, were you going to say something?
No, go ahead.
No, it's really, how do you get around that has been the biggest challenge without, you know, potentially forfeiting your license if you're found to have violated it.
And then also making sure that one activity in one state isn't going to impact your labor peace agreement in another state. So you have to, even though it is state specific, you have to think about it globally if you're involved in multiple states. And so it does present challenges for how these young companies are looking at labor unions or organizing and how they're addressing it.
And just to make it clear, and I probably should have teed off with this at the beginning of the show, but the cannabis industry right now is, depending on whose data you read, second or third in terms of level of activity around labor unions and activism and that kind of thing, you know, besides retail. And it's a very hot industry from a labor relations perspective right now. And unions mm-hmm. have a lot of interest, and it's not just one union either. It's like, there's a whole bunch of different unions that want to get their hands in the pie, right? Which is, I guess, not unexpected, but it's a little different than the olden days when there was like a turf, you know, and if it was retail, it belonged to the UFCW. And if it was, that's not the case around the country, right?
No, it is not. And often you will actually find multiple unions going after the same facility. Mm-hmm. So yes, it is a very hot market right now.
And another thing that has another kind of trend is, in the last week or two, there have been at least two Cemex decisions that I've seen where organizing has taken place. Elections have been decided. I believe in one, the employees voted to not unionize, and yet the NLRB said that there were unfair labor practices committed. I don't remember the name of this case. And they basically said, so, but you're going to have to, we're going to recognize the union and force you to bargain anyway. So employees who said, no, thanks, we don't want one, which is the basic reason for the National Labor Relations Act. One of the primary things it governs is whether employees want to choose to be represented or not. They said, no, thanks. But the board said, well, too bad. We feel your employer violated some laws, and so you get a union anyway.
And then add to that, you're in an industry where it's very easy to move around. So if that employee is not happy with the fact that now they have to recognize the union, it's very easy for them to go down the street to the other dispensary or retail location and apply and get a job there.
Yeah, which is also true in the traditional retail world as well. Although, yeah. So what are some of the misconceptions about the weed industry that I guess maybe, like you said, there's high diversity and a lot of different kinds of identities and politics and reasons for being in the industry. But what surprised you as you started talking to folks and kind of moving, talking to folks at all levels of the company?
One of the biggest surprises for me was on the medical side. I didn't realize how in some locations from a psychological standpoint, as well as a medical standpoint, individuals have to be in order to address the needs of those of their clients. And so I had a very different perspective of the weed industry than the reality of the weed industry. It is a very in certain settings, you have to be very educated in order to succeed within this industry. Mm. And I didn't expect that going in.
Yeah, I don't know. What about you, Amber? Did you have something there to add?
No, I probably would echo the education piece. When you tour an actual cultivation location, there are so many steps and so much to know. And it's a profession, and that's something I didn't know. I had no clue, so that was probably my biggest.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a ton of industries where what goes on behind the scenes, unless you get a chance to see it, you don't appreciate how much complexity there is, you know, to bring a loaf of bread to your dinner table, right? I mean, it's there's a lot of people touch that bread before you ever put butter on it or whatever.
And I think that's one of the things that the industry has to overcome as well, because a lot of people just think, oh, everybody's high when they come to work. And that's not the case, mm-hmm. you know. And so we have to change. When I say we, I'm talking about people in general have to change the way we're looking at it, because it is medicinal for many people. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that society as a whole has embraced that totally yet.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, especially in states where it's not legal or where it's mm-hmm. only medical, but you don't participate, you know, as a user, as a medical marijuana user. Yeah. It's still easy to have kind of those common misconceptions. I wanted to switch over and kind of talk about like the positive like at LRI, what we try to do, our mantra is creating extraordinary workplaces, right? Mm-hmm. So, and like, I know that I've talked to enough people in this industry to kind of know there's like all sorts of clever, like they provide samples of their products on a regular basis if you want it as a perk, right? And I mean, that like, that's really valuable to some people and not valuable at all to others, I suppose, whether you work in the industry or not. But what are they doing to kind of make themselves employers of choice and to deal with these unique, like attracting these unique skills and stuff? What are some of the companies that you've seen doing to kind of set themselves up to be an extraordinary workplace?
I think aside from the obvious free product, what I've taken away is they put a big onus on mental health. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of, some companies offer actual like legit mental health assistance, resources for employees. There's space for them to say, hey, I need a day, you know, I'm a little overwhelmed. And mm-hmm. that's not something that I've seen that's been transferable to a lot of other industries. So I thought that was great, especially an industry that advocates mental health based off of the products that they provide medically. To actually practice that was something that I would think would be attractive to most people.
Cool. Yeah, it's like, I just I just don't know, you know, what you do with your monthly weed allotment, you know,
probably. Hey, use it.
Hey, use it. Yeah. Give it to friends. Yeah. It's just one of those things. Like when you hear it, I spent 35 years as a practitioner in HR, and we did drug tests, right? And if you failed a pot test, right? If you failed for pot, couldn't employ you. Now it's a whole different world. So it's really funny to me.
And another thing they do is they test product. They see whether or not it is something that their employees like in order before they transfer it on to the client.
Yeah, because they're kind of, and they have, and
exactly.
That's no different than other things. Try this. Here's how it makes you feel. Here's an education on what this experience was like so that you can tell your customers who ask questions.
Exactly.
So what else do they do? Like, what are they doing right now? Is it emphasis on leadership and development? Is it on policy implementation? Is it kind of everything all at once?
Unfortunately, more focus on just trying to survive and thrive. I think until regulation is actually passed to make it a little bit easier to exist as a business, many of them are literally just struggling to do the day-to-day. And most of the extra funds that they do have are going into hiring additional staff for the retail or the cultivation side, and not necessarily for, you know, the benefit of the employee. I hate to say it like that, but that's the reality.
I mean, in a growing, you know, essentially somewhat of a startup industry, even though it's been around for a decade. I don't remember when Denver went legal. Colorado went legal. It's been a decade or so, I guess. And I remember hearing a guy when that first legislation first passed at a large, like Littler or one of those large labor firm conferences that they run. Mm-hmm. The guy that was from there, whatever firm it was, I'm pretty sure it was Littler, was from Colorado, and he was working heavily in the industry. And he said the most astonishing statistic that he had heard that year was that there were more dispensaries in Colorado than there were Starbucks. And I was like, oh, come on. So I don't know like what the number of facilities are, you know, on average or whatever, but that just blew my mind. Although that's like a decade old story. So, well, let's kind of lean into wrapping this up. Like, we just wanted to kind of have some like high level discussions. So we've talked a bit about challenges. We've talked a bit about labor peace agreements, you know, some of these unique things. What else is there right now that are particular concerns in the industry that you think we should touch on to kind of wrap things up? Out of ideas?
No.
No, I just have to narrow.
Supply and demand. The industry is going to continue to grow. And what is going to happen when some of these regulations are lowered and we have more and more facilities? Are we going to have too many facilities? What's going to happen, basically?
Mm-hmm.
top of that, how can we ensure that the wages that are provided to our retail employees are sufficient to accommodate their just living, basically their
demand.
And so that's another another challenge. And then also, as we continue to see more and more union activity, how are these companies going to survive?
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone has that answer right now.
Yeah. So there, it seems to me there's a couple others, probably, especially once they, if this reclassification takes place, to your point, Deneen, from a minute ago, it's going to create some stability for them that they haven't had. And it's going to kind of break, it's going to create a new economic, not necessarily generating new money or whatever, but it's going to give them access to banking, which they've struggled at, you know, which I don't even know what that would be like. It has to be hugely complicating. Like, I don't know how they do payroll, and I'm not asking you to answer that question. That's a rhetorical one, but like, how do you do payroll when you can't go to a bank? There has to be a way, right? So anyway, there's that. And then I think too, once the stability comes in, and I know there's been a ton of like venture capital money poured in where people wanted to get in the internet, but I think you'll see even more money come in behind, because once this business is stable, then more traditional businesses will move into it, you know, instead of just the VC people and the edgy entrepreneurs. So it'll probably offer some combination of, you know, like more money, more efficiency being looked for, you know, which, but to your point, might mean less stores or whatever. That's going to continue to drive these underlying employee unrest issues, though, right? So there's probably, at least, you know, from my 50,000 foot view, probably not a lot of hope that they're going to see any relaxation in terms of interest from labor unions and that sort of thing. Do you see anything different in that perspective?
No, not at all.
Okay. I can't
having us, Michael.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. It's the first time we've had internal guests on one of our shows outside of Phil and I. So that's fun. It's nice to hear voices that are familiar and talk to people that we work with on the regular. So thanks for doing this. And we will go ahead and say goodbye. And I hope everybody that listens, if you have any questions or want any more information, you can always reach out to LRI, and Deneen or Amber will be happy to share any expertise they may.